Good evening, intrepid ones. Very interesting when something like the weather changes and the effect that it has on everyone. It creates a story, for one thing. It's new and different, and it's never been like this before. And then it gives a different flavor to our life in some way. Doesn't happen so much in California, but when there was ice all over my car this morning, I thought, oh, cool. We have a story. So I've almost finished the prohibitory precepts. I think we all went home with anger last week in some way. We talked about it a little bit, and then I thought we could talk about it more tonight. It's a difficult subject. Because it's so close to the bone for all of us. We feel it in spite of ourselves. We can try to be noble and completely tranquil, but there's always an element of emotion that arises in us beyond our control. And then our challenge is to know what to do with it. And to understand what it's indicating, what it's trying to show, which, as I said, is showing a kind of chasm between the me and the you. And in some way expressing the chasm, and in another way trying to cross it over, trying to reach out and touch the other, and wake them up with our anger. Raising children, I experienced that sometimes. They wouldn't hear. You try to get through to them, but they don't hear until sometimes a voice is raised and something is said in a more fierce way. It doesn't mean that you've dropped off your love and your care for someone. In fact, it could mean more love and care for someone. But expressing anger has a cost to us. It's the kind of emotion that releases all kinds of chemistry in us. And if we don't have a deep understanding of it, it can poison our existence. So it's an important study for us, not to get rid of it, but to understand it really, really, really well. I experience anger in my dreams. It's very, very strange, but I'm not usually upset by things in my life at all. I just sort of go along. But in my dreams, I express whatever frustration has been going on in the day in some kind of get really mad. The other night, someone was trying to keep me from getting on a ship, an ocean-going liner. And it was so frustrating. I really, really wanted to get on that ship, and that person would not let me. So that's part of my study, how it rises in me. It's very real. So I wonder about you. Jeffrey, you were talking about your mother-in-law. that was a great example. Crossing that chasm in some way, recognizing that it's there. Yeah. Anybody?
Days ago that her friend called her and she says, Dr. Oz had a great exercise this week, that every day for 10 minutes you should just keep writing about what made you angry. For 10 minutes, just keep writing. And a lot of times we have things that we don't even think about, that, oh, I got angry because so-and-so cut me off, or I told my daughter to pick up her room, she didn't, or the dog didn't bring the ball back here, or whatever. So you write them for 10 minutes, and then when you're done, you just tear them into little teeny, teeny, teeny pieces, and you just throw them away.
It's all gone. Yeah.
It's all gone.
Have you tried it?
I haven't, but I thought it was wonderful exercise, because it, you know, it reminds you of what you're angry about.
Mm-hmm.
But she did, and she said it was very difficult.
Mm-hmm.
10 minutes was a long time to bring things up that made you angry through the day. But I was thinking about anger this week and how much of it we have without knowing.
Yeah.
And how it's, for me, it's the source of a lot of problems, that if we could just stop, and even without having a good reason not to be angry, just to make an effort not to be angry, that in a simple way how it just dissolves itself,
mm-hmm.
in a miraculous way.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it might not always work, but it's sure worth the effort. And
yeah. Well, maybe you could combine that writing project and do 5 minutes of anger and then 5 minutes of gratitude.
Yes,
or something.
That would be nice.
And balance it out.
Yes.
Yeah, because every day has lots of healthy goodness in it, too.
Hmm.
Sorry.
Just thought it came up, but I couldn't really tell what exactly anger is, because probably I've been like conditioned to suppress the feeling,
mm-hmm.
and I have been pretty good. But it comes out differently, like sadness, pain, frustration I feel, but probably won't come up, but we still, you know, doing stuff.
Yes.
As usual,
so
all inside.
Yes, I think that's what I'm describing for myself too, that it's there, but it only comes out in the dream. Yeah.
And probably I'm not that aware at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, it takes attention.
Attention.
Lots of attention. And lots of sort of relaxed acknowledgement and even forgiveness of oneself. No, it's not a practice where you have to see it and feel shame and all the different things that people feel when they want to be perfect and see they're not. You know, we have to see that this is part of us. Greed, hate, and delusion. But anger and hatred are very different. And they translate it differently. Sometimes it's greed, anger, and ignorance. Sometimes it's desire, hatred, and illusion. I mean, there are lots of different ways of it. But the anger that this precept is about, it's just the surge of emotion, the surge of energy that comes in relationship between two people. I was in a meeting this morning. There are a number of people who are really upset about fracking. If you know what fracking is. Mm-hmm. And there's a letter to the governor asking him to have a moratorium at least for 6 months so it can be addressed more carefully before it goes into effect, if it does. And it was a beautiful way. There were about 10 people sitting around the table of our assemblyman, Fung, who wasn't there, but his people were there. And everyone was angry about this situation where the water and air are being directly poisoned and poisoned by big business and are actually opening up the cracks in the earth that create earthquakes. So they were very angry, but in a very intelligent way. They brought it up in a way that showed what their way, their understanding was, and spoke in a very strong way that was obviously had anger behind it, but the kind of anger that just wants to get across the chasm so that everybody understood. And it was, they were all strangers to each other. There was a chiropractor, there was a minister, there were a Sierra Club guy, there was an old chemist, lots of different people. A couple of housewives, they were all there for this thing. So I think in that sense, it's a very useful kind of emotion that is necessary in order for our way of being in the world without having a king. That if we had a king who would just make everything the law, that would be one thing. But we're the ones who do it. So we need that kind of energy. The intelligent anger, I call it, that can reach out and try to change things, that we have the opportunity to do that, to exercise that.
I'm going to take the conversation in a little bit more mundane way. And that is where I frequently find my anger coming up is when I'm driving.
Mm-hmm.
I find it's when I get behind the wheel of a car that suddenly I seem to know more than everybody else about how you should drive. And that one should watch the speed limit. This is very important. That one should put on your lights when you're going to turn to sufficiently allow somebody to know that they're going to move it from lanes. And I become this super arbiter of all of this. I don't know. So I really work in terms of integrating my practice and having that person who's in the driver's seat. Talk, if I must, to myself about what I'm examining. Because I don't know that this is a question of testosterone that's talking to me,
mm-hmm.
but it'll just come up. And what I have found when I'm really observing it is that a real story begins to turn in my head.
Mm-hmm.
And when I was younger, it was worse in terms of how I might react, because it was completely mm-hmm. reactionary. I start getting really angry at people.
Yeah.
So, and it is on one level extremely humorous, because it shows just sometimes how silly
yes.
this can become, but primarily because I've watched other people with the same issue, and I've seen what happens when you allow this to get out of hand. You mm-hmm. have people who will really risk the lives of many people in order to make a point about things.
Yeah.
You know, like tailgating.
Yes.
Somebody cuts somebody off. You read about it all the time, about people taking matters into their own hands
mm-hmm.
and stuff. So, anyway, here I am, nearly 68 years of age, and still dealing with road rage, if you will.
Yes.
I find that's my kind of area.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly not anything taught to me. Don't ever remember my father. You know, this wasn't something passed on.
Hmm.
Seems to be my own little thing. And, you know, I'm happy to report that I get better at it all the time, but it's still, when I think about anger, on a very kind of mundane
mm-hmm.
level,
mm-hmm.
that's it.
That's a good one.
So when I'm in the grocery store, whereas other people have big anger issues.
Yes.
If you've ever,
yes.
the whole line thing, for example.
Yeah.
In banks, in grocery stores, those places where a line,
mm-hmm.
because you can just see the frustration in some people's minds mm-hmm. and the anger that, you know, and by the time they get up to the register, they're ready to ring the neck of the poor register, cash register.
Right.
I don't have any problem with that, but don't put me behind the wheel of a car. Like, that's when I have my problems.
Thank you.
I think when I actually feel angry, it's more about a lack of frustration tolerance, almost.
Mm-hmm. Like
whenever I sort of feel this wave of anger, it's about me not getting enough sleep, me being hungry,
yeah.
all these things. But like maybe like the deeper angers in my life, like the ones I have dreams about,
yes.
I don't really feel that sort of overwhelming, like that wave of emotion.
Mm-hmm.
So like I feel almost like they feel like different things to me. Like the anger I feel when I'm driving, I can get out of my car and never remember anything.
Yeah, so it's just passing.
Exactly.
Fad. Yeah.
Exactly. And to me, it almost feels like a bodily thing my body just...
It is. I think it is.
On whether I got enough sleep.
Yes. Yes.
It seems like that. So I don't know. Like, what do you think about those two things?
Well, it's certainly a built-in emotion. And lack of sleep is a good reason for it. Just bursting through because there's nothing to control it anymore. It mm-hmm. just takes too much energy. And the other, that's different. That's a little bit different. That's about how we understand ourselves. how we identify ourselves, and how when that's challenged, it's like the great me is challenged in some way, and we feel very frustrated because we can't be at the head of the line or something like
that.
Yeah, like that. And that's more like what this is talking about. Yeah, the one that's polishing ourself up in comparison to everybody else. And if we think we're the best, then it's really irritating if somebody else comes along and thinks they're the best. It's awful. How can they?
I gave this stink eye to like a 3-year-old who wouldn't let me get to the coffee counter the other day. I like glared both them and their parent down. Because it was my drink, not the
Well, that's what this is for, is just to notice what we do and laugh at it. Laughter is very helpful. Take notice and keep it light. Yeah, not so serious. Well, we've come to the last precept, which sort of is all of the others. They all belong to each other, really. They all are different expressions of this inexpressible something that we call the three treasures, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. The precept says no abusing the three treasures. And that sounds very strange. How can we abuse the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha? But the truth is that the jewels, are expressions of our best nature. And so when we say no abusing the three treasures, we're really offering ourselves to be enough self-conscious to notice when we're not having a good relationship with ourselves, and how important that is. Bodhidharma said, not to give birth to sentient beings and Buddhas is called no abusing the triple treasures. Corbin said, triple treasure, Buddha, Dharma, Sangha, that is the name of yourself, name of your own self. To have undestructive confidence about yourself as triple treasure is the final recognition of receiving Buddha precepts. To have no discrimination between yourself and absolute perfect one is what is meant. No abusing triple treasures. Continuous awakening is nothing but our basic nature. Very, very good at taking ourselves apart and of course we've been conditioned all our life to be corrected We've been corrected by everyone when we were small, and then when we get big, we correct everyone, and we correct ourselves to a fare-thee well. And if we're not careful, we lose the sense of the basis of us, the core of us, the truth of us, because we're so aware of our failure, so-called, our mistakes. Mistakes aren't so serious. It's just that we haven't quite got it. And so we have to see that we didn't get it. And of course, with pride, we hold ourselves to be more perfect than we really are. So it becomes a kind of game in our mind about how to keep our balance as a perfect person when we keep screwing up all the time. And at the same time, we're forgetting who we are. And with that forgetting, we've forgotten at the same time who others are as well. Because once we recognize the truth of us, we have to see it's in everyone. I quoted Lin Chi at the Rohatsu Sesshin and said it's finding a non-enlightened person is very difficult. So this is an important practice. And it sums up, in a way, the 10 precepts. The 10 precepts that bring up each thing that we are challenged by as we make our way through life. And yet, at the same time, this samsaric life, this messy, muddy life that we lead, is it. And this precept is acknowledging and recognizing the truth of it. And then, after these 10 precepts have been recited and committed, we go on to take refuge in the Buddha, Dharma, and Sangha. So it directly leads into taking refuge in this, in our way of saying it. We say return to Buddha. It isn't that we get some new Buddha somewhere. It's just that we return home, and return home to Sangha, and return home to Dharma. So we can talk more about that next time, and talk about this, about really a sort of very big self-respect, you could say, of looking at ourselves in a new way, in a dignified and noble way, in a way that is that we are really children of the world and the universe. We belong here. And that's what this is saying. And it's 8:00. So we'll talk more about it next week.